back to another episode of our Retire While You Work podcast. Carson here, Miles is with me as well. And a pretty exhilarating topic today. We're going to talk a little bit about taxes. It's March, so that means tax season is in full swing. I know
Don't get
because
too excited, everybody.
that's right. I know because I've been there before. Background on me, that was my first 3 or 4 years of my career was in public accounting, doing taxes, and learned a lot. And it was fun.
You sound
So I have a
thrilled. You
CPA.
sound thrilled saying that.
Still have my CPA, but I'll throw this out there. We are not practicing tax accountants. So things that we say, we are not allowed to legally offer tax or legal advice. So everything that we say, confirm it with your accountant, your CPA, as someone who's actually practicing in the field of public accounting and taxes and so on and so forth. So
Had to say that to make compliance happy. So there
that's
we go.
exactly right. So for me, I've already filed my tax return on this recording. It's March 7th. Miles, what about you?
Think I got everything in. What did I tell you? 2 days ago to our CPA. So a little behind, but still within the window.
Still within the window. That's why they give you till April 15th. I've always done it around end of February-ish. And this year I actually have to owe taxes. I got a big payment I got to make on April 15th. So, lesson learned for myself to do better planning during the year. And I should have done better planning last year,
Yeah, I
but.
mean it's so easy for it to get away from you. Like one quarter goes by and you're like, oh, I'll take care of it next quarter. Then you're into quarter two, quarter three. Next thing you know, the year's up and you're sitting here and to your point, it's late February, early March when you're looking at things and realizing that you should have made a couple extra payments throughout the year. It gets away from you pretty quick.
Yes, it's literally, and I have this is part of what I wanted to talk about it, but it's literally as easy as one, you've probably been handed quarterly estimated tax payments. If you make payments quarterly, you have the vouchers, and it just takes literally making the payment. You can do it online now as well. But like you said, you miss one payment, it's like, I'll catch it next quarter. And then you miss the next quarter, and you just say, I'll catch it next quarter. Or, you are a W-2 employee and you have taxes withheld out of your paycheck. It's very easy to be over or under withheld if you don't know how to accurately fill out the form called a W-4. A W-4 is what adjusts how much federal income tax is withheld out of your paycheck. W-2 is the form that you get at the end in every January, shows you how much you made. W-4 is what adjusts your withholding. And that is extremely important because, in my opinion, I think your goal when you file your taxes should be to owe zero and get back zero. That's the ideal. Now, it's pretty difficult to do that because you don't know exactly where your income is going to land, especially if you're a small business owner or you're self-employed taxes. But if you just got a strict W-2, work with a professional, work with your accountant to adjust your W-4 so you're not getting a huge $5,000 refund. More than that, X amount of dollars. Whatever the amount is, because that's free money the government's taking from you, using and waiting to give it back to you until April 5th, tax season when you file your tax return.
Yeah, I was
So
going to say that as well. In my opinion, it is better to owe. Now, I know everybody doesn't feel this way, but I think it is better to owe than to get a big return because at least you weren't giving the IRS a big tax-free loan, essentially. With that, though, you don't want to owe so much that you're also getting penalties. So it's like important to at least stay on top of what you owe to the extent you're not going to be accruing interest and penalties on what you owe because you are so far behind.
I agree. And I've taken it maybe a step a little bit too far. I have a fun little spreadsheet where I have a tax planner. I try to estimate out my income. My wife has a small business. I try to estimate out her net income, calculate self-employment taxes, child tax credit, you name it, my withholding, so that I know how to adjust my withholding on every single paycheck to make sure I'm pretty accurate on where our taxes are going to land.
Yeah, I feel like in all these years I've known you, 5 or 6 years now, I feel like you were always pretty spot on. So when you told me that you had a big or that you were going to owe more than normal this year, I was pretty surprised, I must say.
Yep, I will. It was my wife's first full year with her small business, and she killed it in a good way. But that also means that the IRS is going to come knocking anytime you start making some money. But anyway, let's go through just some reminders. So for those of you who don't know, even though the calendar year 2023 has passed, you still have the potential to contribute for calendar year 2023. The deadline is tax day. So you can contribute to an IRA, Roth IRA or traditional IRA for 2023 up until April 15th of 2024. Those contribution limits are $6,500. If you do a Roth, you can't do a traditional. If you do a traditional, you can't do a Roth. Total $6,500 for those under 50 and $7,500 for those 50 and older. There's an extra $1,000 catch up in there.
Yeah. And there are some, obviously some, exclusions in there. I mean, if you make over a certain amount, single and joint, different amounts, but if you make over those, you can't contribute to the Roth, at all. And then if for the most part, I would say if you are a part of a workplace plan, you cannot make a deductible IRA contribution. You can make a non-deductible IRA contribution, and maybe that makes sense. Maybe it doesn't. I think that's a bigger conversation, but, just a couple exclusions on those as well.
That's right. For 2023, the SEP IRA limit is 66,000. If you're able to max it out, and actually for a SEP, you can, if you extend your taxes, you can contribute up until October 15th of 2024 for 2023. But I think the deadline is technically when you file your tax return. So if you file it, you know, July 1st or something, that's your deadline to contribute to a SEP IRA for 2023 for an employer contribution, which is around 20% of your net business income, roughly 66,000 for 2023. So those are just a few dates. Like Miles said, the phase outs for Roth IRAs for married filing joint is 218,000 of modified adjusted gross income. And then for 2024, that bumps up a little bit. I don't have the number in front of me, but I think it's about 230,000 before it starts phasing out in 2024. So those are all the 2023 numbers and deadlines. Tax day is always April 15th. Do yourself a favor and try to get it done by like April 1st, because some stuff takes time. For example, if you start getting through and filing your tax return and you're like, oh, hey, I found out I can contribute to a SEP because I had a little, you know, a side gig where I had some self-employed income. Well, for us, at least on our side, we may need a couple days of time to set up a SEP. And then we need to get the money from you to get it contributed, or to get it contributed before you end up filing your tax return. So my encouragement is don't wait until April 15th to get into TurboTax or whatever software you use and start filing your tax return. Do it prior to that. Give yourself some time to talk with us, especially if you're going to owe a big tax payment. If you have cash with us that you need to get out and you got to move it to different bank accounts, just give yourself time. Don't waste the last minute.
Yeah. I mean, there's no real point in trying to rush it at the end. It just causes unnecessary stress and confusion sometimes. And it's just, you know, just try and give yourself a few days. I would say with the IRAs, also HSAs, health savings accounts, you can still contribute to those up to the same deadline as well.
That's good. HSAs are great if you're eligible for it. It's one of the triple tax savings. You get a deduction, tax deferred growth, and then tax free growth when you pull it out.
Yeah, you just have to be in a high deductible health, what's considered a high deductible health plan. Don't have that exact number in front of me. I feel like it's like high deductible is considered like 1200 or 1500 or something like that. As far as what you have to pay before the insurance starts paying.
The plan should label itself as HDHP, high deductible health plan. Yeah. And that's when you know you can contribute to an HSA.
Yep.
That's it. So now we can talk about some 2024 numbers. Again, this is, you know, prior we were talking about 2023 that you're still eligible to contribute. So now going forward, these are numbers that started January 1st going into next year. So actually IRA contribution limits have increased to 7,000 or 8,000 for those 50 and over. So still an extra $1,000 catch-up contribution. I do miss it when it was 6,000 because that was an easy $500 a month to contribute. Now it's a little bit, it's like $583.33. And then you're short 4 cents at the end of the year. It's not easy math. The 401k max has increased to 23,000 for deferrals, employee deferrals into the plan, or there's an extra $7,500 for catch up if you're over the age of 50 for a total of 30,500. So, thing to note on 401ks, you cannot contribute an employee deferral into a plan outside of the calendar year. It's also kind of that way with charitable contributions. Charitable contributions also have to be done inside of the calendar year. You know, you don't have until the time to file your tax return. So same thing with your 401k. It's all on a calendar year basis. So for this year, 2024, you can contribute up to $23,000 through payroll deductions.
Yep.
Let's see. SEP IRA contribution limit was $66,000 in 2023. Now it's $69,000 for 2024. And then the annual gift limit is $18,000 for 2024. So I feel like sometimes there's a lot of confusion on gifting and who's going to owe taxes. So a quick skinny is I can sit here and hand Miles $18,000 if I wanted to, and there are no tax implications for myself or for Miles.
You don't have to report it. So it's just like totally between you and the person you give that money to.
Free transfer. Yep, that's exactly right. So so what happens if I give Miles $20,000? Well, how the tax system is currently set up is each person has a lifetime gift exclusion amount. So I believe that number is around $13 million or something like that. 13, 14 million. It keeps going up.
From where we stand today, it's about where it's at.
Okay. And if you're married, filing joint, that's double. So 26, 27 million. What that means is in my lifetime, I can gift $13 million to somebody tax-free, completely tax-free. Now, if I sit here and I hand Miles $20,000, the annual exclusion is $18,000. So I went over the annual exclusion by $2,000. So what that means is I now have to file a gift tax return and I have to report that gift to Miles of $20,000, but I still utilize that $18,000 free amount that I can give to Miles. So that $2,000 difference, I have to report. And now instead of $13 million that I have left to give over the rest of my lifetime, I have $12,998,000 left that I can give completely tax-free. So there's no taxes, even me, the giver. If you ever receive a gift, there's no taxes associated with that. All it's doing, if you go over that annual limit, is reducing the amount you can gift for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And I think that's where the most questions or confusion comes in around that rule is in a given year, somebody feels like they're going to owe taxes if they give over that that gifting limit amount, which has gone up pretty much every year over the last few years. So with that, it's just like to Carson's point, no taxes are owed in this year that it's given. It's just deducted from that overall lifetime exclusion that you have available. Which has that number's bounced around a ton also, and it's that's a whole nother topic, but it's set to come down in the next few years. So there are some people that are starting to plan, but I mean, you can only plan with the numbers you have in front of you. And right now that number's around 13 million per person.
Mm-hmm. And with the gifting, that's talking about cash. As just a side note, gifting property is handled a little bit different. Anything that has basis and a fair market value is handled a little bit different. And I'll use a quick example and then we can wrap this up. But for example, if there's an older parent, let's just say they're getting close to the end of their life and they want to go ahead and gift their home to their child, just to get it out of their name, start cleaning stuff up or whatever. What happens is whoever receives that gift, let's say the child receives that gift, they now inherit the cost basis of their parent, as opposed to if they inherited it after they passed away, they would have gotten a step up in basis. So easy numbers. Let's say the parent bought the house for $500,000. It's now worth $1 million. They gift it to their child while they're still alive. The child receives that basis of $500,000, even though it's worth $1 million. So if they turn around and sell it, they have a $500,000 gain. As opposed to if they received it as an inheritance once their parents passed away, now their basis is $1 million and they turn around and sell it for $1 million, they owe $0 in gain. So that's an easy example, some easy math. So a lot of times people think they want to start gifting property away before they've passed away. In the current tax world, the current tax environment we're in, it makes a lot more sense to wait until after death. That way you get a step up in basis. Obviously, yep. A lot of asterisks there. life's different for everybody, but as an overarching view of that, just something to keep in mind.
And I would just add, the same goes for stocks that are highly appreciated. You know, if you have a large gain inside of stock, rather than gifting that to the kids or the next generation, while somebody who's older and like Carson said, towards the end of their life, maybe or closing in, hold on to that and gift it. I mean, try and give cash if you can. It's the easy, much cleaner, easier way to go about it. Again, every circumstance is different, but if you can limit what you're doing there, it just helps everybody involved. And I think there's a lot of people that don't realize that. So it's just an easy planning item to take advantage of, just to help everybody when it comes to passing assets on to the next generation.
And I'll also say, on that note, we keep trailing off a little bit, but that's fine. A little tax tip. If you have any sort of charitable gifts and you have a highly appreciated asset. So for example, let's say, you know, you bought Apple stock or you bought a ETF and there's just a big gain associated in that. If you, even a portion of it, if you give that stock to the charity that you want to give to, you still get to deduct the charitable contribution. But what you're doing is you're passing that gain out of your personal estate onto the charity. And now if you just turn around and rebuy the stock that you just gifted, you've raised your cost basis and you've eliminated that gain. So again, easy math. You bought a stock for $5,000. It's now worth $10,000. You gift it to the charity for $10,000 and then you turn around and use cash to buy the stock back. You've now eliminated that unrealized gain that you would eventually have to realize one day. Your new basis is $10,000 and you still made the charitable contribution of $10,000. So just an idea there, if you give to charity anyway, and you have some unrealized gain in stock, that's smart. Plus there's also qualified charitable distributions that you can do inside of IRAs if you're in RMD status. So that's a whole nother conversation though.
Yeah. There's a lot of planning items on this topic that you can just continue. I mean, you could go down a rabbit hole and just about each one, like I feel like we could do here. So
yeah.
Big thing to know is that there's definitely ways to be strategic and take advantage of the current tax code and help yourself out and your family off, and just put yourselves in a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, other than that, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the call, but as you get ready to file your taxes, my biggest tips are, one, throughout the year, make your estimated tax payments. Don't delay on those, and you're going to be kicking yourself come tax time when that big check is due. Adjust your withholding with a W-4 to make if you're a W-2 employee, to make sure you're withholding each and every paycheck's enough. And then lastly, don't wait until the last minute. Yeah.
With the W-4, I was going to add too, if you're somebody who's recently got married and now you're going to be filing jointly, that's where it can go get confusing sometimes, because if you're married, you both have full-time jobs, your W-4 is only taking into account your income, and your spouse's W-4 is also only taking into account their income, withholding at those lower amounts. So that's when maybe you need to do some extra withholding so that you don't get to the end of the year and have a big payment. And if you've always been filing single, a lot of people are confused on that because they've always been told, hey, it's better to file married once you get married. And it usually is in just about every circumstance. But the reason the tax situation can get a little messy is just because you're not, the two jobs aren't taking into account the other job. And so things start to blend together and get a little messy. And so that's when a little extra withholding does need to come into play.
That's right. Good stuff. Fun topic. I think for the most part, that's everything we wanted to discuss. As Miles said, there's a lot of planning items that when it comes to taxes. So we're always happy to go into that on an individual basis. Again, I'll throw this out there. Bring us into the loop with a practicing accountant. If you work with an accountant, we work with lots of CPAs and accountants to go through each person's tax situation. Happy to provide it or help provide advice alongside the CPA who can legally do that. So thanks for joining us. This was fun. We'll see you next time on the next episode.
Any opinions are those of myself and not necessarily those of Raymond James. Expressions of opinion are as of this date and are subject to change without notice. The information contained in these podcasts do not purport to be a complete description of the securities market or developments referred to in this material. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but we do not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Every investor situation is unique, and you should consider your investment goals, risk tolerance, and time horizon before making any investment. Prior to making an investment decision, please consult with your financial advisor about your individual situation. Any hypothetical examples are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary. Raymond James does not provide legal or tax services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional.